I'm Anna Morrow, and I'm your host for Our Cover Crops for You, a podcast by the Midwest Cover Crops Council. This is a series of short interviews with farmers and specialists about solving problems on the farm and how cover crops can be a part of the solution. Today, I interview Christian Kapp, who's a small farmer in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Chris also works for Michigan State University. He says that in his area, inputs are expensive because they need to be imported, and so most farms in the area raise continuous hay without returning those nutrients back to the soil. Chris raises hay and livestock, and he says that cover crops have rejuvenated his tired old soils, and that he's jealous of the long growing season in southern Michigan.
Currently, right now, I am employed by Michigan State University as a research technician at Upper Peninsula Research and Extension Center, and we also have a farm at home where I live in Ternary, which would be central Upper Peninsula, focusing on hair sheep, which would be meat sheep, and also dairy beef. We have a lot of acidic soil that was logged off back in basically the middle 1800s. So a lot of the ground that's currently being farmed in my area is predominantly hay ground that's really mined for nutrients. There isn't anything put back into the system. A lot of it's just taken out. And so I wanted to attempt to put something back into the system when we started to farm. And so that's when I focused on a lot more of cover cropping and using cover crops in diverse mixes. I like to go with a 10 to 12 species mix, and then we'll graze it. The reason why I like using livestock to graze a cover crop is I just think that not only do you get the benefits of the cover crop, then you can also, like, you have the extra benefits of using the livestock and the manure and the hoof actions. So if I'm grazing, I usually plant my cover crops as early as possible and then try to time my livestock appropriately. Although last fall I planted some winter rye with the intention of trying to get out in the spring and graze it, but we'll see how that happens.
So, Chris, I know that working with MSU, you've looked at a little more cover crops in terms of an annual crop rotation.
Looking more of like a cash crop situation, I like to have a cover crop that winter kills because I don't have a lot of available time in the spring to really mess around with that cover crop because we're trying to get our crops planted because we have such a short window. So that's why I've really come to this crimson clover oilseed radish mix. I love it. I like to, if you can figure it out in your rotation, I like to plant it like August 1st. And we get a lot of growth on the clover. And we get some nice growth on the radish. We don't have like the state fair radishes, the big ones. They're smaller, and maybe that's okay. I don't know. I just learned yesterday that maybe it's okay not to have state fair radishes, and you want the smaller radish with a longer taproot.
Would you recommend that crimson clover radish blend for a producer that's getting started with cover crops into a row crop situation? Would that be a good first step for a new producer?
Is there a particular location for this row crop producer?
In your area?
My area is tough because we almost have to take a crop out of rotation in order to fit that into our rotation. Yeah. But yes, so if someone was growing a small grain, like an oat or a barley, and they were able to get it combined and have it off by the first or second week of August, yes, I would recommend that mix. Okay. I really think it's a good mix, and sometimes we have late falls, and so we can really put on a lot of biomass, especially in, like last fall, we hit 90 degrees for 3 days in September, and that was the hottest we got all year, and so we had just huge amounts of biomass growing from like September into October.
Can you tell me a little more about planting into that seedbed after your crimson clover radish mix? What's that like?
And so we still use tillage, just to throw that out there. So when we plant, so when we work up a crimson clover oilseed radish following spring, we'll just run a basic field cultivator through it. And it just, the tractor hardly works at all. The soil just crumbles apart. If there is any residue left, it decomposes quite rapidly. The soil is friable. And I guess listening to Ray Weil's presentation, that means because the oilseed radish has a bunch of feeder roots that basically fracture the soil and create porosity, almost. And I have noticed, too, the one time I did no-till into an oilseed radish, I no-tilled corn into an oilseed radish cover crop. It no-tilled like a dream. It planted really nice. We got excellent seed-soil contact. There was hardly any trash. We got a nice stand of corn. We had good soil temps, too, because there wasn't a lot of, you know, residue there.
So how have cover crops solved some problems for you?
They've solved the problem of my tired old soils, I think, by rejuvenating them. I've seen a difference, and it's almost an intangible difference. I don't know how to describe it. It would be, I guess, by plant growth, but I also like to look out. I'm a nerd, so I like to go out and look at earthworms. I really base my soil health sometimes off of earthworms. In the smell of the soil, they say if it smells, then I believe it, you know that's a sign of the Streptomyces bacteria. And so what I'm really trying to do, my ultimate goal, is to get as much organic matter and residue back into my system as possible because it's been mined for so long. But I also would like to get some nutrient cycling as well. But these things are hard to see. And that's the other thing, though, you can tell if your soil is starting to heal. You know, if you can take a knife and you can get out a nice piece of ground, you know, it's a little more friable. I guess it would have more water-stable aggregates. I like to look for earthworm castings.
Okay. What'd your farm look like when you first got started? Like you said that it was mined with the continuous hay practices.
Mm-hmm.
What was your soil like when you started?
So I was low in all nutrients, right? So low in phosphorus, low in potassium, really low in pH, like around a 5.2, 5.3. I didn't check for organic matter, I don't believe. Excessively tilled, I got a lot of sand, so you know you can just tell them for to it. So there wasn't any soil structure, the nutrients were low, it was tired soil. One field had pine trees starting to grow into it. It needed work, I guess, would be a good way to put it. The things with rejuvenating our soil is, you know, we don't utilize a lot of fertilizer because it's expensive. I need to get a fertilizer spreader of my own and calibrate it, and then I would be more confident that I'm somewhat efficient with my application rate.
Sure.
So fertilizer, haven't really put a lot of fertilizer down. Now that we have animals, been trying to use more manure. Mm-hmm.
I just want to clarify. So you said you haven't used a lot of fertilizer inputs. What's not a lot of inputs for you?
So right now, not a lot of nutrients is zero nutrients.
Okay.
Eventually, as I start to seed down more pasture ground, I want to build up the potassium or the P and K rates. Mm-hmm. I'll build those up to maintenance. Like, I can't believe it when I go home to Ann Arbor, right? And so the growing season is so much more lengthened, and yet no one is utilizing cover crops. And I just can't fathom it. We have such a struggle in fitting them into our system and our growing season, and then I'll head down to Ann Arbor area or wherever my travels take me throughout Lower Michigan, and there's this huge, where you just see, like, even right now, you can drive around and you'll see just bare fields, like soybean stubble, or, you know, if you're in a dairy area, silage corn. And I guess I always wonder why these farmers don't, I guess, adopt the cover crop practices, because to me, when I see that bare soil, it's just like, I feel so bad for it, you know? And then I know that Like, if they just put out, like, a red clover or a cereal rye or an annual rye or anything that with, you know, the sort of climate that they have in that area, you could just have this huge... I'm jealous of that area, and I feel like it's not being taken advantage of.
You're jealous of the long growing season in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
I'm jealous of the longer growing season, yes, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and, like, maybe in just southern lower Michigan in general. Because now that I have more experience with growing, like, a clover or a winter cereal, I know the amount of biomass that those growers could achieve if they put in a cover crop. I would just like to say that if you are farming and, you know, you are in an area that you can incorporate cover crops into your system, give it a try. I would really recommend it. And, you know, don't try a large amount. Just try a small acreage of something simple. Check with your extension educator or your agronomist. But really, you have to go to the extension educator because they know everything. Right, Anna?
Right.
Thanks for joining me on Our Cover Crops for You, a podcast by the Midwest Cover Crops Council. I want to thank Chris for his time interviewing today. I really appreciate his perspectives on how cover crops can bring new life to the soil. I might remind you that crimson clover may survive in some areas of the country. Chris experiences very cold winters, and so he expects crimson clover to winter kill. You can find information on all types of cover crops and whether or not they will winter kill in your area on the Midwest Cover Crops Council website. Through our selector tool, we have state-specific cover crop information. Once you enter the tool, you can click on the species name that you're interested in and read all types of details about different cover crop species. I really encourage you to check it out.